He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good day to our listeners for this week's show of Car Keys with Jada Markin, Robin Leach, and Mike Flint when he chimes in. I'm just looking at some statistics which may or may not be of major interest to the listening group, but I'm not going to give numerical statistics except where appropriate, but actually I want to talk about stolen cars. Periodically around our northwest corner and further south in Connecticut, I know, and all over the United States, which has been going on for years, is the topic of cars being stolen, and many times disappearing and ending up in other countries or cut up for parts for resale. But The Week, which is a biweekly magazine, has a little title saying a boom in stolen cars. And so this is for all car owners, even in our northwest Connecticut corner, which has been known to happen. Cars disappear from driveways overnight. It says, you may be targeted by a vast car theft underworld, which is apparently operating maybe throughout the country. Auto theft has soared by about 30% in the U.S. since 2020. I don't know how often they find out how many are going, but their rings employ, the stealing rings employ young men and teens to steal more than 1 million cars a year from driveways, parking lots, and garages, and by carjacking them off the street, which is the most dangerous way to have your car stolen, because you may be in it. It's a criminal culture with a lot of swagger, and that is it for car stealing thoughts, other than what Jay might come up with.
Well, I hadn't thought about it. I haven't thought about it for a while, but I do know two people here in the town of Salisbury, small town, who have had their cars stolen. One of these persons, I think, has had their car stolen twice. They had also left some of their personal belongings and the key to the car in the car. So, or at least that is the rumor. So, obviously, don't leave keys in the car. I don't always lock my cars because I figure if somebody's going to get in the car, they're going to get in the car anyway, so I'd rather they not break a window. But with fobs these days, it's very easy to leave your key in the car. You think, you know, you have one fob in the car, and then you get out of the car, you go back home, and then you go back to your car and you take the second fob with you, having forgotten that your first fob was already in the car, and now you have a key in the car, and you take one out, and, you know, anybody getting in the car can just drive away with it. So make sure your second fob is also out of the car sparingly.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because the car I'm currently driving, it gives me more grief if I leave or go away from the car with it running about the fob. It blows off noises and lights and everything else. And in the particular case of this Buick, it won't let you leave it in the car.
Well, will it let you leave it in the car even if it blows off noise for a few seconds after you leave it?
I have
Or you don't give it enough time to see it?
No,
I think that's a very good safety feature.
Mike, the car pretty well, and having driven it, actually, way back when, not so long ago. But as you know, that Buick is a German Opel from Europe. Opel was still in the GM family of brands and manufacturers. And in Europe, they are very, very careful about cars being stolen. It happens a lot more than here. You go to a gas pump and pump your gas, you're actually required to lock your car while you're doing that.
Good.
So I'm not surprised that the specs may be a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, some cars will just not let you walk away from them.
Yeah, no, it screams, and I just can't. I can't just walk away from leaving, so I don't know how long it might do it. But I have taken at least 30, 45 seconds sometimes to stand there, and it's still doing it. But now you talk about locking at the pump. Another odd thing about this car, if you lock the car, it locks the door on the gas pump, too, or on the gas fill.
Well, that's an interesting point. For you know, there was a time when gas was being stolen out of people's cars, and the manufacturers, many of them, if not all of them, back in that era, and I can't remember what era it was, did put locking gas caps, or made locking gas caps, as part of the items that would lock when you did lock your car overnight or whatever.
Yeah, this one...
I am very critical of the manufacturers that don't still have that feature in their vehicle.
Well,
and the interesting thing is I have three Jeep Cherokees, as some listeners who keep count or may not keep
I think
count,
all of them
I know, and the one that has the locking gas cap is the original Jeep Cherokee that I got in 2014.
Yeah, now this
lock that car, the gas cap is locked.
This one doesn't have a gas cap. It locks the door.
It's got the
locks the door itself.
You just open a thing and you can stick the nozzle in.
Right.
That's also become ubiquitous among many manufacturers. You don't have a gas cap on many of the cars, which makes it even easier, I would think, to steal gas from those that do not lock when you lock
yeah,
the car.
Well, on this one it does, and I found that out.
On many cars it doesn't, and I criticized Jeep when I went to an auto show one time, and I talked to Jeep reps, and I said I was very disappointed that they stopped the locking gas cap mechanism, putting it in their vehicles.
So did they change that back after?
I believe that on a couple of the models they are. When I've gone into a showroom, I have checked out to see whether or not you could just push on the cap and it bounces open. That's the pushing thing. It just pops open. And
this whole thing about gas caps, it does drive me a little crazy because I drive a lot of different cars, and you know, a lot of them have different ways of opening. Some still have a physical
cap on
lever
it.
That yeah. you have to pull. That's actually a physical cable to the gas cap.
Right.
And I think of Subarus, well, my older Subarus, but also more recent Hondas. And then others, you know, there's no safety precaution whatsoever.
Well, back to the Jeep Cherokee situation. I have a push button in the driver's door of the 2014 Jeep, and because I have the newer ones don't have that feature. You just go out and push the cap, and whether the engine's running or the door's locked or not, it opens right up, and anybody could stick a siphon pump down there and siphon the gas out of your car. And when I leave a couple of cars to be left off at dealerships, you know, I wonder whether that is ever happening because, anyways, enough maybe on the gas cap situation. But it's not, the European cars are all, I think most of them have locking caps, the Mercedes, the Audis, and all that. But on our American cars, it would be very easy to siphon gas out of many of the cars that are running around our roads today.
Here's one more thing. Should the gas tank nozzle filler be on the left side of the car or the right side of the car?
Well, Jay, it's a very good question, because when there were single exhaust pipes, it was known that the pipes and the gas cap or the gas filler next would be on the opposite side of the car. And that was told to me by somebody, or else I read it in a car mag, so it must have been true. But with dual exhaust pretty much across the board on many vehicles these days, and I don't know exactly why you have to have duals, but it's become visually a very sort of an item suggesting more power coming out of the engine. I don't know why they're not on the same side of the car.
Well, they do have a little arrow, though, in the dashboard.
That's terrific. And they do now.
What I would like to go back to was the days when it was in the center of the back of the car, so it didn't matter. You could pull up to the gas pump.
There were those. You must be an old man, Mike, to know that, because you're right. They used to be in the middle.
And also with that, they had longer hoses on the gas pumps, too. So you just pulled in. You didn't have to.
The gas caps seem to be on different sides of different cars, and I tell you, you've got to look at that. You got to squint, or at least I do with my old eyes. I've got to squint to remember which side of the to look at the gauge on the dashboard to see which side I've got to get onto the pump.
I hear that
to try to make it easier to fill the car. Next, on my chart of things, they're talking about. There's been a lot of talk in the industry and across the world about tariffs which are being implemented at various places around the world against imports from countries not producing vehicles like cars or items like TVs or whatever. But tariffs, the question really is are the gas, are the car prices going to rise dramatically or significantly if these tariffs stay in place? Jay and I have had a little bit of a chat about it, and I don't know whether what your take is on it, Jay, but the headlines, you know, here's another headline. Tariffs may hike foreign car prices. This is talking about car prices imported, or cars imported to the U.S. And apparently, here's another statistic. There are is over 2.5%, 25% more, or whatever. Anyways, there are over a million cars coming into the country from foreign producers. Jay, I may be wrong in that statistic, but we do buy a lot of European cars. There are lots of Mercedes, German cars, Japanese cars, Korean cars coming into the country. And are tariffs going to make these car prices go up so significantly that it might hurt their sales? And we may be looking 10 years down the line. We may be talking 2 years down the line.
Yeah, I think I try not to get too excited because, first of all, it's a very complex matter.
Yes, it is.
The flow of cars and car components, especially from one country to another, from one factory to another, is just very, very complex. And all manufacturers have manufacturing facilities all everywhere around the world.
Use parts from everywhere.
So even the German manufacturers have certain models that are built here in the U.S. and go back to Europe. So in some cases, they build the engines in Europe, they ship them over here, the cars are assembled here in the U.S. and then shipped back to Europe. But they could also be manufactured in Mexico. Some models are manufactured in Spain and Mexico or even other countries. So, I remember I had for a short time, was driving like a 2003, 2004 Honda CR-V. And I actually checked the plate on that car, and the car actually had been built in the U.K. So Honda was building cars in the U.K. and shipping them to the U.S. And this is not so long ago. We're talking, early to mid-2000s. With a model that was extremely popular and still is. Let's see what happens when the dust settles. First of all, let's see what tariffs and in what amounts they go into effect when they do after that April 2nd infamous date. And we'll go from there. Obviously, there's a lot of scenarios being developed by all the manufacturers. But short answer is, who knows? We'll see.
Well, there's a theory out there that's been put forth that if the tariffs are going to stick, people better think about buying new cars sooner than later. I have one friend who just did exactly that. They went out exactly because they were worried about the prices going up if the tariffs stuck, and they recently purchased a Hyundai or a Kia hybrid vehicle. Recently, meaning within a week of this particular show's being aired, and they're thrilled with it, but other people are lying in wait. And then we get to the situation about which cars are selling in the electric car field, and we have the U.S. brands, and which includes Tesla, and we have the European brands, which includes Porsche. And sales are wavering in some places and going up in others. And I've never thought that politics would play an issue in people's desire to buy a car, because Tesla is at the heart of that topic or this statement. And Tesla happens to make one of the best electric vehicles, electric line of vehicles, or electric vehicle lines in the country, or if not the world. Yeah, they have more experience than anybody else. And
if I may, can I put in a little chip here?
Sure.
First off, tariffs real quick. The tariffs are two-way, and a lot of the negotiations going on is trying to equalize that. So you're jumping too quickly about, oh, run out and buy something. It's going to be another several months or better before it all balances. You're not listening. You're interrupting.
Yes, okay.
You're going to have to wait for all of this to come out, which is probably going to be a good half a year or better. And jumping out and buying a car now is just freaking out for no good reason. Where you're going into the Tesla and the politics, it's a shame that people think that way today, that, oh, I'm not going to buy the vehicle that I really want because I don't agree with the politics of the company owner. That's just childish.
But that's the way Americans think, because we're talking about America here.
Not all Americans.
Although it is a worldwide epidemic at a certain level, and I would agree with you. That's why I said, despite this political situation, Tesla still builds one of the best electric cars. I think Jay will agree.
I agree with one of the better electric cars. Here's where I stand on the Tesla thing. Yes, political factors have come into play in the decision of whether or not to buy a Tesla vehicle, and in the decision to sell Tesla vehicles. The used car market, I think it's pretty easy to predict that, you know, in the short term, sales of used Teslas are plummeting.
And they'll be very good buys.
The prices of used Teslas are plummeting. But I think Tesla's problems are more than just the political aspect of it. Yes, it's a great company. Yes, they make great product. But they are being, they have been caught up and passed by BYD, and I've mentioned this a couple of times.
Yes.
But BYD stands for Build Your Dream, is a Chinese is a Chinese car company that started, I think, circa 2003, 2004, in which Warren Buffett invested 10%. He owned, whether it's through Berkshire Hathaway or whatever, however he did it. But Warren Buffett owned 10% of BYD. Now his share is under 5%. But the point is that company has done extremely well. And by the way, the stock went 20-fold, I think, in the time that he owned it between 2008 and now. But more to the point, the company makes a range of electric vehicles, not just cars. They also make hybrids, which goes back to the point that the Europeans are making, and even the Japanese manufacturers, that maybe hybrids are the way to go now. And I know Robin would totally agree with that. And most of BYD's sales are still hybrid cars, but they have become, in the last part of 2024, the number one electric car manufacturer in sales in the world. And they have a pretty wide range. And I've mentioned this before, they have a fantastic electric pickup truck that's available in Mexico. And it probably is better than any other electric
truck.
What's
the name of it as a truck brand? Do you know, Jay?
But even more importantly, they're addressing the issue of charging, or slow charging or fast charging, and they've just come out with a charging station that can charge roughly 250 miles of range in 5 minutes. And they are implementing those charging stations throughout China. And then they will go through the rest of the world. And here in the U.S., we will block them as long as we can. And that's it.
Well, Jay, are they in Europe?
They have started. They sold, I think, 150,000 electric vehicles in Europe last year.
I'm trying to remember when I was in Amsterdam a year or so ago whether or not that was a BYD car showroom that I actually entered and looked at. And if it was, I think it was BYD. And I want to tell you, I know the CEO of Ford, I believe, stuck one in to the U.S. and drove around and commented. He was very, very impressed with it. I must say, looking at those cars in the showroom, of which there were three or four of maybe two different models, they were very impressive. I had no idea what the exchange rate was and the dollar versus the Netherlands, kron, whatever it is, What is it, Jay? You should know.
The euro.
The what?
You're talking about the currency in Europe?
Yes.
What? Euro.
The euro. Well, okay, euro.
That's what it is.
If it got into the United States, it would be probably a big hit, as well as what you think it probably could be in Europe.
So, the doom and let's go beyond doom and gloom because
We're not in doom and gloom. I hope.
I think it is doom and gloom, and I actually just read an article about one of the automotive journalists writes a column, his own column, the AutoExtremist.com,
yeah.
Peter DiLorenzo, and he's worked in Detroit and in the auto industry for decades. He's very sarcastic, very critical of what happens in Detroit. He's also been extremely critical of electric vehicles and the fact that they were going to take over the world. And I hadn't read him in a bunch of weeks or months, actually. And I just read his column this week, and it's entitled Sobering Truth, and the fact that BYD and electric vehicles are going to take over. Anyway, enough doom and gloom. Talking about fun things now, spring is or was right around the corner, even though it's...
Yeah, sure was.
It was, right? But I think like many, many other people, I went and took out my little older sports car and had it prepped for summer driving and had a few surprises in the making. One of them related to tires. The tires on that car had perfectly good tread, but I brought the car in for an unrelated issue to one of the very good local car shops, and the guy looks at the car and says, "You might want new tires." And so one of the front tires was totally blistered, and definitely I was not going to go very far with that tire. So. And this is one of the, and I can go on about, you know, the choice of new tires and whether you get summer tires or go with all seasons. Fact is, if you drive a fun car or a summer car, check the tire dates on your tires, because even though the tires may have very good tread,
they
may need to be replaced.
Well, the carcasses dry out, Jay. It's a very good point to bring up. I had found that out on my Jaguar, which I recently retired with new tires, and their tires looked very good as far as tread depth was concerned, but you could see cracks on the sidewall of the carcass, and I did not look at the date, but I knew they'd been on the car for probably 8 of the years I've owned it, and you know, cars. If cars sit outside, they have accelerated wear or on the rubber part of the tire. If they're in garages, they don't wear that quickly from the standpoint of drying out. But old tires can look wonderfully new-like, and as you've discovered, they can have blisters or cracks around the rims and all that, all of which are telling you that those tires should be replaced, or you should drive very carefully going forward until you do replace them.
Where would you find the date on the tires?
On the sidewall.
On the sidewall?
Miracle, yes. And it doesn't just say it was. I think it's the week and the year of which a tire is built is on the sidewall.
Yeah.
Jay, is that correct?
I believe so, yeah. But it is written on the sidewall. It's not one of the bigger numbers.
It doesn't stick out.
But
you have to look at it. It can be very frustrating.
That's what I was looking for. So it's, a month and a year, probably?
I don't know. The numbers, I think, will be two-numbered numbers, or would be the week of the year that it was built in. And I don't know whether the year is a letter or is a number, because I have not looked to try to find that out.
Okay.
You should, if you've got a car with tires that are, over 5 years old or maybe over 8 years old, Jay, I don't know what you would consider.
No, over 3 or 4 or 5 years.
3 or 4 or 5 years old, and you haven't driven the car a lot, I would check on it and check the tires carefully before you took off on a cross-country trip or any trip of significance and at speed. Because tires will heat up. internally once you start driving. And they can heat up if the tires are too low to a point of failure, and they can probably heat up if the tires are old at high and accelerated failure might occur at higher speeds, extended higher speed driving. Jay, you can chime in if there's any other way to think about it.
No, that pretty much sums it up. Back to checking tires. And
Let's talk about car chargers in about a sentence or less, maybe. I read another statistic that in January of this year, or maybe of another year, 18% of the charging stations failed to be utilized by people because they either did not work or the people wanting to use them couldn't wait long enough to use it. That means that 82% were successful, which is a pretty good statistic as far as our discussion about charging stations being appropriately available for users. I know we have some in the northwest corner. We have a Tesla charging station in Canaan, for example, at a Stop and Shop Market. I have never seen it full, which probably tells us that we don't have, you know, 6 or 8 Teslas driving around looking for charging at the same time. But, Jay, you have seen full charging areas full of cars with waiting lines, right, at airports and the like?
Yeah, although they are, like in New York, around JFK, where there's a lot of other construction, by the way, they are building more charging stations. But they limit the time you can spend. You can only charge to 80%. I mean, they're trying to limit the time people's,
Well, I think it's best for the batteries, too, isn't it, to only charge to 80% most of the time, just for the battery condition?
Yeah, plus it takes a lot longer after the 80%,
And I do not know what the power levels of these charging stations are going in are generally. Is there a minimum grade? Charging grade level, level 2 or level 3.
They're obviously all fast charging stations, and the ones in around New York airports seem to work. I mean, they all every time I see them, they do. They're all in use, so they're more than 82% reliable.
Right,
but there are parts, like you mentioned, there are parts of the country. I think California is notorious for having terrible issues with public charging stations, but.
It's getting better.
And they're the ones with all the electric cars.
Well, that's true. Jay, what do you have on your list?
I'm going down through my list. We were talking about gas and gas stations. So one of the issues I had with my little sports car was probably gas-related. And I'm trying to find good gas. And so I did find a website where you can find a list of gas-free, ethanol-free
stations,
ethanol-free gas stations, and the entire list, state by state, for the entire country. And I forget what it's called, but it's easily, quick search online will.
Were you looking for ethanol-free gas, Jay?
Yes, and I know, and we know that.
And
all
we know
the
that Stewart shops in New York all have ethanol-free. Premium grade gasoline for sale, and I recently went up and filled 2 5-gallon canisters of ethanol-free high grade gas for my lawnmowers and to use in one of my cars if I needed to. That's a very interesting thing to know about in this corner because I've talked to several people who didn't know that they existed. It's interesting that Stewart shops aren't in Connecticut. And I'm not quite sure why that's the case. Do you have any idea?
So now this summer I have 2 reasons for going to Stewart's shops. One is to get ethanol-free gas, and the other is to get their ice cream.
That's a very good second reason, because I agree with you completely.
And on that note, it's time to say goodbye.
Okay, and until next week, we are Jay, Robin, and Mike for Car Keys.
Have a good one, guys.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, Robinhood Radio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.